All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. And good evening. This is American Vindicta. I'm your host, Doug Thornton. Well, for this week, we've been talking a lot about preparation and survival stuff. I thought tonight I'd try to get a little bit more technical with you. We've gone over a lot about, you know, the cool guy gear, the tactical gear, the weaponry, maybe a little bit of training and things to do here and there. That all being said, please make sure you have adequate amount of training, not only safety training with the weapons that you use, but common sense, practical uses of your weapon or weapons that you intend to employ for your own self-defense. Same thing with your gear. Make sure that the gear that you use is from a reputable company, not just a random thing that you bought off of Amazon. Even though, you know, you may be able to go to Amazon and look up tactical gear or camping gear or bushcrafting gear and find some good deals on some things here and there, it doesn't mean that it's from a reputable company that's produced by people who actually like what they do, love what they do. So because of that, they take a lot of appreciation into the materials that they use for what they're selling. We're going to be briefly going over Dave Canterbury's Bushcraft 101, A Field Guide to the Art of Wilderness Survival. It was a New York Times bestseller. It's probably my favorite book when it comes to bushcraft. And he has a 3-book series. There's actually more to these series, but right now I have these 3 in front of me. The one I previously mentioned, which is the 101, and then the Advanced Bushcraft, which is an expert field guide to the art of wilderness survival. And actually very clever and useful book is the Bushcraft Field Guide to Trapping, Gathering, and Cooking in the Wild. Now, I'm one of those people that says that in order to have knowledge on hand, sometimes the best way to have that is by field guide manuals like what we had in the military, or by books that are wrote by experts like Dave Canterbury. And Dave's a former Army veteran. He's got a lot of years of experience. I believe he's out of Kentucky, so he's got a tremendous amount of years of experience. And he really is trying to bring back the American frontiersman mindset. And I'll be honest with you, Dave Canterbury really inspired me to kind of go back to the drawing board when it came to my idea of survival and preparatory needs. I was like a lot of people, you know, I was like, well, as long as I have my guns, as long as I have my bullets, I'll do whatever I can and make it through the day, no matter what doomsday scenario there is. But, you know, we're not always going to be blessed to have these items on us. We're not always going to be blessed to be in a place where, you know, you have food readily available, water readily available. You know, let's take a very theatrical style look at this, but let's just say in the year 2022 or 23, we end up becoming a country divided. We have an epic civil war. The world starts to fall into a World War III type footpath. And everything in society starts to break down. Well, you may not have the ability to go to the grocery store anymore. You may not have the ability to go to the hardware store anymore, the lumber yard. You may not be able to have your vehicle repaired if it had been damaged. And, you know, that's something we don't talk about a lot. But even with vehicles, you know, in a doomsday-like environment, you may have a very hardy vehicle that you actually spent a lot of money in prepping and gearing up, and then just that one random 300-pound hog or that one random big buck runs out and you end up T-boning it and it destroys the front end of your vehicle. And, you know, it basically kills it. It makes it where you can't really drive it and it's not reliable anymore. So you may have to be on foot. And the things that I like to talk about for this hyperbolic situation that we're going to find ourselves in. If you were the next American rifleman, if you were the next American militia frontiersman who is banding together to fight, let's say, you know, the communist invasion of Russia and China and all their friends, we will find ourselves doing much like our ancestors did whenever we fought the British. We'll be having to file together in guerrilla-like small unit tactics, probably rendezvousing out in the wilderness, maybe even having camp in the wilderness, a base camp in the wilderness, or in the marshes, or, you know, in places where it's probably not going to be in the urban cities or within the suburban areas, because there's just too many people for that type of an operation. And for OPSEC, operational security to be very withheld, you know, you want to be away from the public as much as possible. That's why military bases aren't in the middle of a city. So we're just going to do kind of an overview of what would the American rifleman of the 2021-2022 year look like. What would that person need to be successful? Mind you, when I say rifleman, don't think I'm only referring to only men. Ladies, there are a plethora of factual-based historical accounts throughout the world of women having to fight for their country to with either repel or to take back a tyrannical government or an invading enemy. You know, modern-day Jerusalem has a lot of that going on. We see a lot of the Israelites right now, the Israelis, they have a lot of women within their military. You know, even though it is part of their law for everyone to be more or less drafted into the military, a large fighting force of them are women. The Peshmerga that we fought with and aligned with during the Iraq wars, a lot of their snipers were women. And it scared the hell out of a lot of the Al-Qaeda that we were fighting. So, you know, just a little inspiration. Ladies, you should always take up the need to want to learn these skills, these survival skills, especially preparatory skills, and, you know, anything that can help better you in your family's survivability. So that's pretty much what we're going to talk about. We'll do our best to cover as much ground as possible. This is probably going to be a 3 or 4 part series because I do want to go through all of these books and share all this information with you. And I do strongly suggest, you know, go to Dave Canterbury's selfrelienceoutfitters.com. Research what you want, but Dave has already done most of that groundwork for you. He also, if you go to his website, on his website, and I believe if you also go to YouTube, he has a tremendous amount of time that he is scrupulously putting forth great videos showing all types of different survival skills, necessary little skills here and there, things that you can use for foraging, the way that the frontiersmen used to have their packs packed, what type of knives they used, what type of weapons that they used, the faults within it and the benefits of them, you know, even back to not having a sleeping bag and just using wool blankets and you know, leather and canvas that's oiled. You know, it's some really cool stuff. And if anything, if you ever wanted just to, you know, experience bushcrafting, which is a big love of mine, I love bushcrafting. I don't do enough of it. And I don't think anyone does enough of it. You know, take one day out into the woods and just try some of this stuff. You'll probably surprise yourself at how much you don't know and how hard some of this stuff can be. And then when you start finding the life hacks in bushcrafting, you go, oh, well, this isn't as bad as I thought, you know, and you build up self-confidence, which is what I want you, the listener, to have. I want you to have confidence in survival. I want you to have confidence within your own survivability, especially you and your family, because there may come a time and day where you'll need it, and there may come a time and day where our country will need you to survive. We'll need you to be able to resist. We'll need you to be able to come back and to help build society again. And unlike Joe Biden's Build Back Better plan, you have to think, if you're going to build something back better, what had to be destroyed first? And I'm pretty sure that's what's on the chopping block is America. So, hey, just for the fun of it, let's get ready for it. So without further ado, I'm going to pick up this book called Bushcraft 101, and I'm just going to breeze through it. I could write down a bunch of stuff. I could tell you a bunch of stuff. I could point you to a bunch of different videos of different people, but man, I really appreciate the thoroughness that Dave Canterbury has put in these books and the professionalism that he's put in these books. So, you know, shout out to Dave Canterbury. I don't get paid to say any of this. I just, for the love of what this guy does, I truly appreciate it. So I want to share it. So here's the introduction. Preconceived notions, especially when one is fairly brought up in their influence, are most difficult to shake off. When people think that surviving and these bushcraft-like skills are very hard and they're intimidating or too challenging, you build a wall in your mind that says, well, I can't go and do this. And the best way to break those barriers down is to just get out there and experience it and try it. Try to experiment as much as you can with fire, with cutting materials, foraging skills. There's a bunch of books out there on foraging. My wife has one. I'll have to get that and break that out one day. Your foraging skills will also be by your area within the United States. And that's specifically what we're talking about right now. So, within your own local area, your flora and fauna that's there for you to collect or to trap or shoot and fish. So, you know, the skills that are unique that come to bushcraft, to effectively practice bushcraft, you must master a unique skill set that it would include firecraft, navigation, and we're talking about like primitive style navigation using a compass or using the stars. You know, there's all different types of methods of navigation, trapping or creating the different types of shelters, tracking. One of the things that I found, especially when I was in the military, we did a little bit of tracking. And growing up, I grew up as hunting all the time. I was always in the woods, and I got really used to following the natural paths that the animals would make, or the tunnel systems that the animals would make through the grass and through the trees. If you've ever been out in the woods and you're a country boy like me, I bet you know what I'm talking about. If you start to follow those paths, you're breaking off the line of a natural footpath that humans make. But you have to understand something also with these tracking skills. These natural paths that animals make are also ambush spots for predatory animals. So keep that in mind when you go to trap. Useful types of tools that are out there and the uses for them, both modern and primitive. There's a lot of different skills that are out there that are needed for not just a hobby of bushcrafting, but to excel and advance in bushcrafting. And once again, bushcrafting is a life-saving skill. It is a life-saving skill. It is one of the reasons why the whole camping industry has gone as far as it has and is as popular as it has. But we're not talking about glamping when we talk about bushcraft. You know, we're talking about some knuckle-busting stuff and getting out there and getting dirty. But honestly, when we also talk about survival in this post-apocalyptic era that is the United States eventually, we're talking about some really rough times where, you know, the industry is not going to be there to support you. You're not going to have your Gatorade anymore. You're not going to have probably your snack bars anymore. A lot of the mundane things that you don't think about that you survive upon every day will not be there. So you'll be reliant upon, more than likely, in this scenario, the environment. You'll be reliant upon traditional skills that the frontiersmen used. So once again, that's why we have these books broke out. We're going to go for our first break, and then we're going to dive right into this.
The time for political correctness is in the rearview mirror. The fact is, the American dollar is on the verge of collapse. It's been abused mightily by those in power. Massive debt, massive inflation have left Americans with few options. Most think they have no choice but to ride it out with their money in the bank. And sadly, they're going to awaken one day and all that money is going to be gone. Do you have an option? The answer is yes. Precious metals. But knowing to go into precious metals is not the same thing as knowing who to go into precious metals with. We have an answer for you. It's called Renaissance Precious Metals. It's owned and operated by the famed Steve Quayle, radio talk show host, world famous, and an expert in precious metals. Been doing the work for 34 years. So whether you're interested in gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, whatever your interest is, wherever you want to land in your escape pod, this is it. Renaissance Precious Metals can be reached at 406-586-4842. Call Steve Quayle at 406-586-4842. You can also visit them online at sqmetals.com. Ladies and gentlemen, don't wait. The collapse is underway. The time to act is now.
And we're back. This is American Vindicta. I'm your host, Doug Thornton. We are continuing to talk about bushcrafting, bushcraft skills, the elements of survivability, and where I think a good source of that type of information that's readily available, very cheap, easy to understand is, and that would be Dave Canterbury's books, the 101 Bushcraft, and then Advanced Bushcraft, and the Bushcraft Field Guide to Trapping, Gathering, and Cooking books. These three books are available at his website. Please check him out. Dave has a lot of years of experience. And right now, I'm just going to read you excerpts from this book. He is the expert on this, not me. I am still just a mere traveler or tramper of the woods. I grew up as a country boy, and I grew up doing a lot of this stuff, but nowhere near to the advanced level that Dave has. So I'm going to let him tell you how to survive based off his own words. And maybe if we're really lucky, if our stars align, I could one day get him as an interview. That'd just be amazing. But for right now, I'm going to read you something out of this book that I find to be very interesting. Nesmith. George Washington Sears Nesmith, who was an inventor in tramping and traveling in the woods for recreation, not survival. He was one of the leading guys for bringing Americans into this new way of thinking that is recreation in the woods or camping. Back then, it was also called tramping or having woodcraft skills. So Nesmith said it best when he explained that we do not go into the green woods and crystal waters to rough it. We go to smooth it. That is a powerful statement, especially in this day of modern convenience. Many believe that to smooth it or to be comfortable means that we need lots of gear and gadgets. In reality, you need very little equipment to succeed in the wild. Instead, you need knowledge of the natural world. This book gives you that knowledge in a short span of words, but it is must be complemented by your own experience and time in the bush to gain your own doctorate in woodsy knowledge. Hallelujah. Sometimes, you know, going back to the basics is the best thing. Turning off your phone, getting away from your computer and your smart TV. Getting away from your modern compliances, you know, all those things that make life really easy, and going back to the woods every now and then and just trying to start a fire with your hands. You know, I've done this to a couple of buddies of mine where we'll be out in the woods and say, hey, why don't you start the fire tonight? And I'll just sit there and I'll laugh. I'll snicker to myself and like, well, you know, how do you want to do it? Like, you're the, it's on you. If we don't have a way to start a fire tonight, how are you going to start that fire? And so they'll go walking around looking for different stones and sticks. And I've had people try to rub sticks together to create a friction fire. Good luck with that, depending on the temperate of the area that you live in. Almost no one was ever successful because we've lost this knowledge. We've lost this ability to know how to use the natural elements within our surroundings to make that life-saving fire. So, snickering and like the good non-commissioned officer that I was, I pulled out a handy little Bic lighter, put some leaves, some tinder together, lit our fire. We enjoyed our coffee that night, and we kind of laughed about it. I said, see, you thought outside the box. You went and grabbed sticks and all this stuff because movies have told you how to start a fire. Reality says you start a fire however you have to start a fire in that type of a survival situation. And I showed him this simple little Bic lighter. It costs less than a dollar. I put it in my pocket. I completely forget it's there. I can put one in every single pocket. I can put it in my socks. I can put 100 of them in a pack. I can put them all over my kit. And I'll forget that they're there. But it's one of those things where, I mean, this lighter, I mean, I'll probably get a good 100 or more strikes out of it before it even gets that, you know, half empty. You know, whenever it's really cold or you happen to fall in a freezing water and you need to start that life-saving fire, you need to start it now. You need to start it right then. You don't need to be stumbling around trying to remember how to make fire by all these different elements in the woods, like the way that the movies try to lie to you of how to do it. It is my belief that by understanding natural resources and learning about the items that make the difference between comfort and misery, you can attain an almost euphoric experience when spending time on the trail or in the bush. With this book as your guide, soon you'll be enjoying the wilderness as well without the need to smooth it. To that end, I present to you some of the things that Dave Canterbury has wrote. We're going to start off with the simple pack. When I was in the military, and for those of you that were in the military, you know that we had rucksacks and Alice packs. And we typically just shoved as much stuff in there as possible when you're, you know, a new private. You don't really know how to place things. You don't really, you know, if you never carried your own water, that sucks. You don't know where to put it and the displacement of weight. So, you know, you learn through trial and error and through pain. And you start to learn that, hey, you know, sometimes the heavier things are actually maybe better to go on top of my pack so not everything's weighted down by my hips where I may need to be maneuverable. You know, maybe I don't need all these elongated items like a sleeping mat to be down at the very bottom. Because now I can't move correctly in and out of woods or in and out of homes. You know, these big, huge packs that you see people making. Yeah, you can cram a lot of stuff into it. And yeah, you may use some of it. But more than likely, you're not going to use half of it. And so because of that, if you can find a way to lessen the weight, have multi-use items that are made of good material, that are not cheap, and that will withstand the elements, you can lighten your load by 25 to 50%, which not only does that make life a lot easier when we're talking about moving miles in the wilderness or on foot, you know, through urban society or between cross country, between, you know, like the counties and the cities, we're talking not just that, but it gives you energy back, which if you're having to have this, you know, bushcraft-like skill because, let's say, the Chinese are threatening nuclear war, well, we need the ability to go back into the wilderness where it's safer. Well, the further you can go every day, the further, hopefully, into safety away from people that you can go. Now, do not forget that Mother Nature can be a lot more deadly than people and a lot less forgiving than people, but we're trying to escape a dangerous society and going back into the frontiersman-like mindset. So that means I'm going to need a pack. And in my pack, I'm going to need to carry some survivability gear. We want, for one thing, you want a light, durable pack. But within that pack, we want the five C's. That is a cutting tool. Now, cutting tools can be knives, axes, machetes, saws, small scissors. And these would all be used to manufacture needed items and process foods. For me, I have a spoon cutting knives. I have small whittling knives. They're very cheap to find. And there's a lot of good videos out there. There's a lot of good books out there that teach you how to make your own, you know, your own cutlery, your own forks, your own spoons. One thing that I got really, really used to doing was basically making my own chopsticks, because that was the simplest, quickest, easiest way to make something to eat stuff with. So, you know, your cutting tools. Don't have cheap axes. Don't have cheap saws. And when we talk about saws, we're typically talking about a bow saw or some sort of a saw that's going to be able to be broken down and stowed within that pack, and something that you can also easily carry multiple blades depending on the aggressiveness of the blade. Do you need thicker blades for larger trees? Do you need smaller blades for finer work? You know, that's going to be up to you. I suggest carry a plethora of blades. You're probably not going to run out of them too much. But once again, we're talking about a hypothetical here of you needing to escape the cities, go back into the frontier, go back into the wilderness, and restart your life. So that means you're probably going to have to fell trees. You're probably going to have to cut trees down and make them into workable lumber of some kind. Let alone you'll be needing to saw the trees up into manageable size logs that you can then split for firewood. So the first C, cutting tools. Second C, cover elements. Cover elements to create a microclimate of protection from the elements. So that would be your canvas. That would be your tarpaulin. Oiled cloths, oiled canvas. These are things that bushcrafters have used. Trappers, let alone, have used. Explorers have used for decades, hundreds of years. It's just something that can help separate the rain barrier or the moisture barrier from yourself and your pack and where you're sleeping at, which typically will be on the ground, ground sleeping. So you want that moisture barrier, that dry barrier from the ground. Not only that, but a cold ground will suck the body heat out of you at the same time. So you want that barrier, right? So that's where what I do is I have, it's about an 8x8 tarp, and then also have a 8x8 wax canvas. And the tarp would be something that I would put on the ground. I could put leaves on top of it to create a little bit of a thermal barrier, and then I can also put my sleeping bag or my sleeping system, because I still use my Marine Corps sleeping system, on top of that. From there, I would want to create some sort of another barrier that would provide me shelter from any type of rainfall that may happen overnight. And sometimes that might also be something I'll use to, you know, protect a small fire, to protect my gear, to be able to help manage any type of, you know, unpleasant weather that's out there. You know, a lot of humidity, a lot of moisture can happen in the middle of the night coming into the day. So anything that you can use to have that type of barrier. Moores Konchke, who's a survival expert and instructor from Canada, created what was called the Super Shelter. And I think he actually has a downloadable thing for this. But if you just type in Super Shelter, you'll see it. And this is genius. What Moores did was he more or less just took limbs, lashed them together with bindings, with cordage, and he made a teepee-like structure or a dome-like structure, and then he took plastic wrap, like the wrap that you would use to secure a bowl over when you have food in it. And he would take that thin plastic wrap, and he would wrap all the way around this very light put together wooden structure. And what it would end up doing is it would end up creating basically a gas house-like effect. And I remember watching the videos on this, and it is 20 degrees outside, 3 feet of snow, but it's 70 degrees on the inside of his shelter. And, all it was this, probably 2 pounds worth of plastic that he took with him. So that's ingenious ways of thinking. Being very clever, that is how you go out into the field, you go out into the wilderness with less materials, but more knowledge. The knowledge is what's going to help you survive, not so much the gadgets and the gizmos. Those are going to weigh you down, and you're going to look very foolish when you don't know how to use them. Combustion devices. So this one should be pretty simple. For creating the fires needed not only to preserve and cook food, but also to make medicines and provide needed warmth. So your combustion materials are pretty simple. Anything that could be like a knife and a ferrous serum rod, flint and steel. There's certain different ways to do chemical fires. But, I still say that the good old handy dandy lighter is your best friend. It's a proven piece of equipment that will always work. And Bic lighters are always at every store you stop at. Stock up on them. They're very, very easy to have. And another thing, you don't think about this too much, but having these materials, especially if you bulk item some of them, if you have bulk items of them, you don't really think about this, but you can use lighters as a bartering tool when the time comes. The ability to have fire in your hand on call, on demand, that to some people may be worth more than gold or silver at that point in time. Gold and silver may not be able to provide you warmth, may not be able to fish for you, may not be able to hunt or forage or trap for you, but it can purchase for you. So if you're in the need to have fire, don't think that some people may not be so desperate that they'll just throw you, 1 ounce of gold. Hey man, this is an ounce of gold, but can I have a couple spare lighters for me and my family so we can have fire, so we can eat our food? Hey man, that's an interesting way to barter. You don't really think about it. People get desperate and they do really weird things. Containers. The next C, containers to carry water over distances or to protect collected food sources. On Dave's website, he has various different types of containers that are stainless steel, small containers. And it's ingenious how this is created. But I've used them before, and I own quite a bit of them. Do you remember back in the day whenever your grandfather would keep an old Folgers can, and he would put the nuts and bolts in it, or random bits of nails in there or whatever? Those small containers, it's not hard to take something like that, put a Ziploc bag in it, fill it full of a mixed amount of beans and rice and salt and pepper and a little bit of whatever seasonings that you want in there, and then to seal it and put it in your pack. And then all you have to do is take a spoon and scoop a couple of that out here and there as you're cooking your meal over your fire to add that extra bit of nourishment, to add that extra bit of caloric intake. Containers also for spare bullets, for spare parts, for whatever machinery that you may need that, you'll have to eventually start rotating parts out of. I like to carry these little containers to have these spare bits to my screwdriver. I have my grandfather's old screwdriver that is still a hand cranking screwdriver and a drill. And then also have some, other spare materials. And I like to keep a lot of the bits to these different various heads for these screwdrivers in this container. So when I need it, all I have to do is take it out of my pack. There it is. If I need to do maintenance on anything, or if I need to take something apart that I had found, I have at least that material on me already. And all I do is I take it and I put it all in there, and I take like a piece of handkerchief or, any type of material, like cotton balls, and I'll push it in there and I'll secure it and pack it in there. That way it's not rattling around making a lot of noise. We want to have good noise discipline out in the woods, not only for yourself, but so that you can hear other things around you. And you also don't want to be heard. You know, if you're the kid stumbling around and step on every stick and finding every loud crunching leaf, you know, people are going to see it, the animals are going to see it. And if you're needing to forage or you're needing to hunt and you're sounding like a baby elephant coming through, that's going to be very hard. So, you know, make sure at least your gear is tight, it's quiet, and you are using noise discipline. All right, next, the last C, cordage. So we use cordage for bindings and lashings. Some people get really wound up about stuff like this. To me, 550 cord or whatever type of string, like fishing line string that you need, thick cotton string, nylon string, you know, whatever you need for cordage and for lashing materials, just have it on you. There is bushcraft skills that teaches you how to make cordage on your own. That's a very advanced skill. It is much easier and cheaper just to have the cordage on you, on hand. And that way, I would suggest you do learn knots and how to use various different types of knots, so that once you're done with your cordage and with whatever you've lashed, you can unlash it and continue to use it. I like to use hanks of cordage. A hank is just like a small compressed amount of cordage that I would put in a pouch somewhere. Typically, I like to have like 550 cordage at about, 10 feet. And I'll normally carry probably about 4 or 5 of those just on my person for any type of lashing that I may need. And then I'll carry probably, 100 to 200, maybe 300 feet worth of that in my pack. It's very light. I can compress it, and I can always use it for, a whole different variety of needs, from hanging up shirts and pants that get wet or shoes, to potentially using it for trapping, potentially using it for as a fishing line if my original fishing line that I normally carry with me, is unavailable for whatever reason. Not only that, but if I need to set up like an ad hoc teepee or some other sort of sheltering material, I can have that cordage on hand. And that way I'm not, scrambling around trying to figure out how do I get everything to stay together. So that's the overview right now for the 5 C's. That's cutting tools, cover elements, combustion devices, containers, and cordages. We'll move on to some other different things here after we get back from the break. But I would implore you, please check out Dave Canterbury's website. Really great material, really great items that he sells on there. And I know we talked about it earlier, but take your survivability seriously. One day your life may rely upon it. We will see you right after the break.
Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum has said, "You will own nothing and you will love it." And that's represented by what's going on across the planet today, where the economy of the world is in free fall, and nowhere is it more in evidence than with our own President Biden deliberately trying to sabotage what we have, access to food, other resources. So Americans are in a unique position, really for the first time in our history. We're going to have to provide for ourselves or subject ourselves to the whim of the government. Do you really trust a government to feed you that left 1,000 Americans behind enemy lines in Afghanistan? I don't think so. So where do you go? When you ask the question, who's the best prepper out there today? There's only one answer. Ready Made Resources and Robert Griswold. I call him King Prepper. And that's how a lot of people think of him. You have everything there you'd want, from night vision to storable food, how to prepare cooking in emergency situations, books and videos on how to prepare alternative energy, communication, first aid that you wouldn't think of, natural antibiotics, you name it. Bob has it. Now, here's the good thing about Bob Griswold that no one else does but him. You don't have to buy anything to talk to him. If you're not sure where to start with your preparation, no obligation phone call directly to Bob. You can talk to him for free. Most people will charge you an arm and a leg for a half-hour conversation. That's not Bob Griswold. He cares about helping America get prepared. Go to readymaderesources.com, or you can call the number directly at 800-627-3809. Again, that contact information, readymaderesources.com, for the best prepping outfit in the country, or call Bob Griswold directly, 800-627-3809.
And welcome back. So, this is American Vindicta. I'm your host, Doug Thornton. We are still continuing to talk about Dave Gannaberry's Bushcraft 101 book and the life-saving survivability skills that are in there that help to make your time while afoot in the wilderness a little bit easier and smoother during your travel. So right now we're going to talk about the core temperature control, comfort, and convenience, the need for this. The five C's, which are cutting tools, cover elements, combustion devices, containers, and cordages, are largely intended to help you control your core temperature, your comfort, and your convenience. When packing or creating your kit, understanding these elements will help to determine which items are truly important and which are only added weight. Now, I'm reading directly from Dave's book. So, I don't know how many of you out there are average backpackers, or, you know, you actually do a lot of backpacking, a lot of survival school stuff or wilderness travels. I tend to do it quite a bit here and there. I live on plenty of acreage of my house. It's backed up to the woods, and I'm back there constantly. And every time I go back there, I try to challenge myself with at least one skill every time I would go back there. You know, just a myriad of repetitions to continue to hone that skill. And one of the things that I find myself constantly doing when we talk about these skills and knowledge is I constantly find myself taking weight out of my pack. So I need, for me personally, I need the basics. I need to be able to keep my body warm at night. I need to be able to have a fire to cook my food, not only to cook my food and boil water, but also to warm my shelter, but also that fire is a deterrent to wild animals or predatory animals. And, you know, that fire is also something that I can use for a signaling device if I'm stranded in a location. So if you are stranded in a location, probably one of the best ways to make a signal fire is just to make a large fire out in the open. And after you get that fire good and hot and going, start getting any type of greenery, green bushes, green limbs that have plenty of green leaves on it, to throw it on there, because what that'll end up doing is I'll have a lot of smoke that comes out of it. And that's one of the general ways that a signal fire is used for most of us that were in any type of field of, you know, coming out and finding people. So, once again, I've used various different types of packs. I've used Ilby packs. I've used Alice packs. Rucksacks of different types of shapes. I've actually used baskets, basket packs, which, you know, depending on what you're doing, sometimes is about as much as you need. One of the really interesting things that I've seen Dave do, and I actually replicated this, and I laughed to myself at how convenient it was. I actually took a small, like, 3-gallon trash can that I bought from Dollar General. I secured it with some shoulder straps, and that was my backpack for the day. And I was like, the only thing I was doing was foraging. So that pack, the trash can more or less, was the perfect item that I needed to find all the different types of wood-burning material that I was using for that day. And I was mainly hunting fat wood, pine knots, you know, any type of real dry debris that was on the ground. And, man, it worked out great. And I was like, this is a nifty little trick. Thank you. So, you know, think outside the box. I don't suggest you go to Walmart and buy a backpack for, like, school. That's not what we're talking about. When we talk about having a good pack, having a good rucksack or a pack frame or a pack basket or even a bed blanket roll style pack, we're talking about something that is load-bearing. You need to be able to carry your water. You need to be able to carry your food, your clothing, potentially extra weapons, extra ammunition, extra cordage, cutting materials, the various different types of cooking materials you may have. You may also even carry fire with you. You may carry all the elements for starting your fire with you. So you want something that will hold up to a long travel and a lot of load bearing. I wouldn't suggest putting more than 50 pounds on you. That's going to greatly slow you down. It's going to make you burn a lot of calories. And you're also going to get slow, sluggish. You're going to drain a lot of energy. And by the time you need to make base camp, you're going to be really exhausted. And when we get really exhausted, that's when mistakes get made. When you get really exhausted and it's nighttime, you haven't made your fire yet, you got your headlamp or a candle, you know, whatever it is that you're using, like beeswax candles are a really good thing to have out in the woods. You know, if you're having to use a knife for any reason and you're tired, that's when you may slip up and cut yourself. And that cut, depending on how long you're out there, depending on what type of materials you have, that one little cut that gets infected may be what does you in. So we want you to make sure that you have plenty of energy, that you have the proper amount of water, the proper amount of nutrition on you, and you need to have all these things to be able to be carried in you. I still say make sure that you have the ability to process water and process food in your pack at all times. Here's an excerpt from the book. Your first priority in any kit is to maintain your bodily functions and core temperature in any weather condition. For this reason, items such as combustion devices, clothing, and containers to process water will be of the utmost importance. If you look at comfort, these are the items that you will want to provide a comfortable night's sleep. Sleeping at least 4 solid hours per night is crucial to enjoying your time while in the wilderness. And let me speak to that a little bit. When I was on combat operations in Iraq, there were times when we would be up for a couple of days and not sleep. There was a time when we would be up for a couple of days and, you know, you would catnap for 15 minutes here and there while you're on patrols. Even when you came back from patrol, you get back to your FOB and you immediately have other additional duties that you need to accomplish first. You know, checking on the generators, refueling it, restocking water, restocking food, you know, making more sandbags or doing whatever it is that the company gunny needs. That is always the most ridiculous task ever that can normally wait. But, you know, you may be out for a period of time and during that period of time, you may get exceptionally tired, you know, beaten and bruised and banged up. And the more sleep deprivation that you have, the less your ability to survive is going to go. You're going to mess up eventually. You're going to have a hiccup the more sleep deprivation you end up having. So, you know, packing the right type of material, creating the right type of shelter, having good security for your shelter, these are things that's going to help you sleep a little bit better. Not only that, but having proper amounts of water and good nutritional food will help you sleep better. You can gauge someone's experience level in the woods by how well he or she sleeps at night. That's a very, very true statement. I've been out there where we were having to, you know, do jungle operations for training, and there's just no real way comfortably to sleep on the ground, especially at where we were at. You know, there's rocks everywhere, and you just, most of the time whenever you're on that type of a movement, you have all your gear on, you've been training most of the day, and you're hiking most of the day with a lot of weight. You're already really tired and groggy, your caloric deficit already. So whenever you go to sleep, you just lay down. You put your tent and your tent mate, you know, you put your tent wherever you are, you know, in a row and all that other good stuff. But, you know, you don't really think about the rocks underneath you. And you know, you wake up in the morning because you have this damn rock that's just jabbing into the back of your shoulder blade. And you end up being really groggy. And the rest of the day sucks because you're tired and you're falling asleep all throughout the day and getting your butt chewed out. So don't let that happen to you. Get good night sleep. Make sure that you have the proper amount of equipment that you need to sleep comfortably and not so much stuff that it's weighing you down. Convenience items are those that you don't have to pack, but you would like to bring along to make things enjoyable or to make some task a bit easier. By focusing on core temperature control and comfort when planning your packing, you will make room for convenience items that make for memorable times in the wild. So one of those things that, you know, those of us who've been around this long enough know that the little convenience items, they're not necessarily gadgets and gizmos. Different types of tools for tasks that are, you know, very demanding, having a heavier axe or, you know, carrying a small 4-pound hammer for certain tasks, like whenever you're batoning wood, which is whenever you get, you know, a small log that's, I don't know, about fist size. You take your knife, you put it on the middle of the wood, and then you use another piece of wood to baton that knife all the way through it. And that's how you, you know, split your wood in half. Well, you know, I've cheated to the point that I used, you know, a small hammer. And I mean, when I was making camp stakes, you know, I'd do my best when I'd get out there to make a wooden mallet every time, but it just becomes a big pain. So I ended up bringing a 4-pound hammer with me. 4 pounds didn't seem like a lot to me. So, you know, it's just a little added tool. Another thing, you know, while you're out in the woods, while you're trying to enjoy yourself and you're trying to relive the American frontiersman's lifestyle, or you're preparing for chaos and World War III and Civil War, and you're living in an American dystopian wasteland, remember this. Everything I've told you from this book thus far will not help you if you don't go practice it. Don't be the person that at the worst time, whenever prophecy hits the fan, that you need these skills, you don't have them. At least you could have some sort of material on you, like these books, to reference. But that should be referencing, you know, task-oriented stuff, not your basic element and level of survival. You need to make sure that you know how to make a proper shelter. You need to know how to make fire, also to control that fire, not to set the woods on fire. You need to know how to properly prepare your water, to gather water, to purify your water, to make food properly, and to eat that food immediately after it's been made. And you need to be able to protect yourself while out in the woods, not just from other people potentially, but from predatory animals. Not just predatory animals, but Mother Nature herself. So have the proper amount of clothing, the proper kind of clothing, like good jackets, good socks, good boots, good pants, a good tent, a tarp or a canvas tarp that you can protect yourself whenever it rains. All these things are talked about very, very well in this book. I really can't say enough about it. I read this book at least, you know, every couple months, and I go out and I challenge myself with at least two or three bushcrafting skill tasks just to make sure that I still understand what I'm doing, that my tools are still up to par for what I'm doing, and that I can still readily find them. I have children, so half the time my tools are scattered throughout the yard because they're digging for dinosaur bones. So that is going to conclude today's lesson, today's show. We're going to continue to talk about bushcrafting, bushcraft skills, survivability skills. And once again, you know, it does not hurt to know these things, but not knowing them when you need to know them can get you hurt. This is American Vindicta. I'm your host, Doug Ford. Out. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.